Support for WPR comes from the Madison Museum of Contemporary Art, an independent organization dedicated to creating experiences that educate, reflect, and inspire. More is at mmoca.org.
Support for WPR comes from the Wisconsin DNR. Preventing food waste and composting scraps and uneaten veggies, grains, and fruit can help the environment. More dnr.wi.gov by searching food waste.
Stephen Thompson considers himself a Wisconsin boy. It's the place he calls home, even though he makes his living these days as a reviewer and editor at NPR Music. But before NPR, Thompson did something audacious. He joined his friends on the now-celebrated satirical newspaper The Onion. The Onion was born in Madison, just like to the best of our knowledge. Thompson did his part by launching the non-satirical part of the paper, the art section known as the AV Club. He told Steve Paulson that at the time, in the pre-internet era, it seemed unlikely that The Onion would ever be more than a regional paper.
Well, I think that one advantage that The Onion had, you know, especially early on, was that it didn't come from a traditional humor center. And so it didn't have this filter of like a bunch of, and you know, no knock on people who went to Harvard to become comedy writers, but it didn't sort of come from this place of, you know, formal training and, you know, a certain amount of privilege. It came from a lot of sort of working class folks who, you know, they went to the University of Wisconsin, you know, generally, you know, which is a public university, and generally on in-state tuition. And you know, some of those people had even dropped out, you know, by the time they were really, you know, writing for The Onion. But I think it really benefited from that outsider's perspective.
And did that affect the content, do you think, or your particular slant on what made something funny?
Well, you know, absolutely. I think that there was a lot of day-to-day experience in a lot of the writing. I think a lot of The Onion's sort of template comes from drab, unfulfilling everyday existence a little bit. And there's an editor at the Onion who's still there named John Crewson, who's a very good friend of mine. And he always used to give new writers and new employees what he called the Crewson test. And it was sort of this series of, you know, what's the worst thing you've ever done for minimum wage? And, you know, like specifics about like, what is the difference between a Hobart and a Bun-O-Matic? And, you know, one is like the industrial grade coffee maker and one is the industrial grade meat slicer. And, you know, you didn't have to get all the questions right. But the idea was he really liked to have, and The Onion really liked to have, people who knew what it was like to work a terrible, terrible job. You know, and I think that informed a lot of The Onion's humor, is that there's a certain amount of populism to it that comes from not having had all of this highfalutin training.
And what's interesting is it went on to become a huge success while it was still based in Wisconsin. I mean, it gained a national following. So obviously this sensibility was not just appealing to people in the Midwest.
Right. Man, the internet came along at just the right time for us, you know, because we had certainly built up a certain amount of feelings of being isolated from the sort of somewhat imaginary power brokers in, you know, in New York and Los Angeles. You know, we sort of felt like, oh, they're there and we're here. And there was a certain amount of attraction to those places. And, you know, a number of Onion writers in the early days kind of en masse moved to LA to become TV writers. And a bunch of them are still very, very successful at it today. You know, so there was somewhat of a sense of, we're this somewhat isolated pocket of people, and if we wanted to reach a national audience, we would have to leave and go there. But when the internet came along, all of a sudden, you know, we were on the internet, and like I think within 6 weeks, there was an article about us in the New Yorker, and we were kind of, you know, we were kind of like, oh, you know, all of a sudden, there's this great equalizing presence that allows us to compete on a level playing field.
It is worth pointing out that The Onion did move its offices to New York back in 2001. Now, you've just been saying that, you know, you could do a lot of your work on the internet. Why did you end up moving to New York?
Well, the comedy staff moved to New York in part because they felt, and, you know, they sort of felt isolated. And, you know, they wanted to sort of be among other comedy people. Part of it is you know, the editor-in-chief at that time, Rob Siegel, he was from Long Island, and so New York was home to him. You know, so there was a certain pull of New York for him, and then for a lot of the comedy writers who were under him, you know, there was sort of a sense they had been in Madison for a long, long time, And they wanted to, you know, rub elbows with people who, you know, they had sort of professional connections with. There was, you know, sort of a sense like, this is our hometown. We've been here for a long time. You know, maybe we can branch out and find bigger and better things. That was sort of, you know, their mindset. And I didn't want to pay twice what I paid for my mortgage for a studio apartment. So, you know, at the time I was about to become a dad and I didn't necessarily have that gnawing desire to become a New Yorker.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is a trope in American culture that if you want to make it big in the literary scene or on Broadway, you have to go to New York. If you want to make movies, you have to go to L.A. Every place else is kind of like the waiting room, waiting for something bigger and better to happen. How much truth is there in that cliche?
I mean, I have always sort of raged against that cliche, you know, because I've seen, you know, really intriguing art spring out of other places. And I always think that any sort of great collaborative art simply comes from chemistry between or among, you know, a few people. And that can happen. I saw that happen in Madison, Wisconsin. And so I've always been somewhat defiant of, you know, oh, you absolutely positively have to be in New York, especially since we have the sort of democratizing influence of the internet. At the same time, you know, I've sometimes been guilty of kind of reflexively ignoring what goes on there. And you don't want to do that either. You want to stay somewhat plugged into what people are saying there. But, you know, through the power of, you know, social media and traveling, I feel like you can have it both ways. But at the same time, I've never tried to make it as a screenwriter. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to carve out most of my career in either Madison, Wisconsin or Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. You stayed in Madison for a while, even after a lot of the Onion staff went off to New York City.
Correct. And a lot of my staff on the AV Club had gone to Chicago. And Chicago had sort of become, you know, the hub of where a lot of the sort of entertainment writing was coming from. I happened to stay based in Madison because I had a family and I had a house and I love Madison. I mean, Madison is very sort of etched into each individual strand of my DNA. And it was very hard, it took NPR really to get me to leave Madison.
Okay, so you follow music really closely. I mean, you are an editor and a reviewer for NPR. How much do you think it matters for up-and-coming musicians where they're based? I mean, if they are in, I don't know, in the Midwest or the Southwest, is that a strike against them?
I don't think it is. And, you know, I think as much as anything, sometimes being based in a place like Brooklyn, you know, every once in a while, yeah, artists there can sort of catch lightning in a bottle and have a lot of people be interested in them. But, you know, at the same time, I feel like there's also a lot to be gained from sort of building up a little bit more slowly in the place that you call home and sort of developing, you know, your live chops and your regional reputation. And you know, you look at a band when you talk about Wisconsin, everybody sort of talks about Bon Iver. And the fact that Bon Iver has stayed based in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and really made that a big part of its specialness and its identity. The fact that it sort of captures, you know, what it's like to be in the, you know, in the upper Midwest and what it's like to be in the winter in Wisconsin. And I think that's become a big part of kind of the allure and the cachet of that particular music.
And it's worth pointing out that when Justin Vernon, the frontman for Bon Iver, just got his Grammy, he kind of made a point of that and, you know, sort of gave that shout out to Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and to all those people who aren't sort of in that more highly commercialized circuit.
Yeah, that guy wears Wisconsin like a badge of honor. You know, when you see, you know, you see him on talk shows, you know, he'll perform on David Letterman and you'll see like a little Bucky Badger head poking out of his solar plexus. And for somebody like me who has, you know, fairly deep Wisconsin roots, there's real joy in that. But, you know, if you're from the American Southwest, there are going to be elements to the culture there that are going to creep into your music in interesting ways. And I think if you have every ambitious musician based in one city, you're kind of losing a lot of these kind of regional dialects and what ultimately adds to musical uniqueness that is going to be very important to an artist's, you know, sort of success and importance. And so I think a little bit too much emphasis is paid to, oh, you have to be in Brooklyn, because I think that can sort of bleach out some of what might make you interesting.
You now have lived in the Washington, D.C. area for some years now. You're from Wisconsin, grew up here, went to college here. Do you think of yourself essentially as a Wisconsinite?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I've really grown to love living in Washington, D.C., and I've found that generally, the more I travel, the more you really get a sense that people are, I like to think fundamentally nice wherever you go, and you can always find great people anywhere. Washington, D.C. is full of terrific people, but at the same time, I think leaving Wisconsin has made me probably more of a diehard Wisconsinite. I never miss a Packer game. I never miss a Badger game. More and more there's kind of this, you find other people who are from Wisconsin or have a connection to Wisconsin, and you kind of speak this little special language with people. And I definitely probably more think of myself as a Wisconsinite now than I did when I lived in Wisconsin.
I guess that's an old story. Often you have to go away to really appreciate where you came from.
Well, judging by how hard I cried when I left, I think I appreciated living there when I was there.
Thank you, Stephen. This has been fun.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Stephen Thompson is an editor and reviewer at NPR Music and the founder of the Onion's AV Club section. He spoke with Steve Paulson.